because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol. Before we get to presidential politics, something I was very surprised. The Center on Media and Democracy reported it first on Tuesday. Robin Voss is not done with the open records issue. The center's open records query revealed that on July 23rd, his staffer asked that a bill be drafted giving the Senate and the Assembly the right to declare their own rules on what's exempt from open records.
Which is almost 3 weeks after they said we're not going to do this.
Which
is
exactly 3 weeks after the 2nd of July vote by Joint Finance. Boy, this surprised me. Did you get any inkling of that?
No. What Voss did say, though, when we asked him about it at a news conference this week, was that was a continuation of an old conversation, that they were still feeling things out. But there are no changes planned this session, and nothing's happening up front. What I've gotten the impression of, lawmakers still feel like they would like it that if I'm your lawmaker and you're my constituent and you have a personal issue, like a sensitive personal issue with, you need me to work with you on some program in Medicaid, for example, that your personal information should not be public record. That's their one of their main arguments. They're getting an issue, though, of getting into these other things, of shielding other records from public view, drafting notes, these kinds of things. They have so poisoned the well right now because of this whole fiasco, if you
want
to call
it that. Was brought up, the firestorm of public criticism.
I don't know from talking to people if they can ever get to a point of being able to touch those things. Of their concerns about constituent privacy when it comes to those issues. I don't think I ever get there right now.
Okay. Well, we had a chance to ask Robin Voss after that news conference just why he feels so strongly about that. So let's listen to what the speaker said on that subject. That the legislature should be able to set its own rules on that subject, right?
Well, first of all, I believe that as an institution, the legislature should be able to set its own rules, just like we can the days we're on the floor, the opportunity for us to work with our staff, the opportunity for us to interact with the public. One of the things that we tried to do during the open records discussion was to ensure that when somebody contacts their legislator, they have a right to privacy. I think if somebody writes us and they have a concern about a family member, or they want to deal with their unemployment case or disability or anything like that, I think they should have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And that's where it all started. So there is no effort to change the open records law at this point. But do I think that there should be a discussion to say whether or not that's an appropriate opportunity for us to talk about? I think the discussion should
be. But you told the news conference that you're not going to pursue this change this session, correct, sir?
Yeah.
JR, the Democrats' position, Peter Barkas says we need a constitutional amendment. He also said that we need a constitutional amendment because you can't trust Republicans on this issue, especially the governor. Now, a constitutional amendment, if they felt strongly about it, was this was something Democrats could have pushed when they held power in 09 and 10. But are you surprised at saying constitutional amendment needed?
Not surprised they would push that kind of an issue, but there's not a realistic option or possibility that they're actually going to get one done, because if you're a Republican, why would you give Democrats the opportunity to beat you up two sessions in a row? You have to pass it back-to-back sessions and go to a referendum on open records. You just want it to go away at this point.
Okay, let's take just a few seconds here and listen to Peter Barkas, the Assembly Democratic leader, talking about why Republicans on the open records issue cannot be trusted. Peter.
I do believe the Speaker, if he said he's not going to bring it up, I think he'll make every effort not to do that. But with the governor, I can't have that level of confidence. We saw how quickly open records could be in jeopardy. I mean, with the 999 motion that came forward late in the night before holiday weekend, hoping the budget would pass the next week, clearly there were some people there. I don't know if it was the governor primarily or what the story was, but obviously there were people that were trying to make significant degradation of our right to open records. So I think we have to be vigilant. So, I take Speaker at his word. I think I'm sure he means well to make sure that this doesn't come forward. But I saw with the governor, something near and dear to my heart, which is this right to work issue. And despite a promise made, it couldn't have been any clearer what he told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel when he needed those votes in the heart of his campaign, and then completely reversed himself.
JR, you had Attorney General Brad Schimmel at a WisPolitics luncheon this week. He was asked about this, and he said that he clearly believes that communications between constituents, well, anybody who contacts a legislator on a pending bill, that should be covered by the open records law, right?
Yes. A little bit of tension there, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the thing, open records law, Republicans may have a legitimate point about what should be, should not be open records, but again, the well is so poisoned right now, and people are so on edge. You have the media ready to pounce on any single suggestion about open records laws being changed. That it's a different environment for them. They want to do anything about
it. One more question on this issue. You and I have talked to Democrats who say that this is a live issue for the 2016 campaigns, that people care about the open records law and maintaining the transparency. Are they overstating it? Do voters really care?
Well, they're trying to weave into a theme, if you will, of you have open records stuff, redistricting, campaign finance forms coming out later this fall. We'll see what that looks like. That Republicans are constantly trying to shield the public from what they're doing in the Capitol from the public, taking power from the people and consolidating their hands. That's an argument they're trying to make. They think the open records is symbolic of that and perhaps the most egregious example of where they're trying to shut up the public. So I'm sure if you're on joint finance and you voted for that provision, you're going to get grief about your next election if you have an opponent. Now, some of those guys have very safe seats, but I'm sure, like a Tom Tiffany, it's not a swing seat. It definitely leans Republican. Presidential year, though, I'm sure that the Dems will take a run at him and try and make it an issue. Looking back to bite him, don't know yet. But you look at the rest of that people on that podium. Luther Olson's seat, he was up to a recall a few years ago, beat it back easily.
Yeah.
Sheila Harsdorf, her seat leans Republican.
Senator Darling's up next year too.
Her seat's now rock solid Republican. So there're not really many
after
swing
she
seats.
Also survived a recall.
Yes, been redrawn.
Yeah.
So there aren't really many vulnerables who've taken these votes, but you can expand it to the entire legislature in ways because, look, you say their party, their leadership, not just the individual lawmaker in a swing district, but they're part of an effort, part of their party's part of an effort to make this happen.
So the vote by Senator Tiffany late on the evening of July 2nd for that motion, which included the sweeping, unprecedented changes to open records, we will be hearing from Democrats on that.
I mean, they'd almost be crazy not to. I'm not saying that Tiffany will lose that seat because of it. And it's not a swing seat anymore. It was kind of a little bit for years before, but it is an okay Republican seat, but they will definitely take a run at him over it.
Yeah, okay, new subject. I was curious, we talked about this last week, but I want to bring it back because it was really the first time that Speaker Voss talked about this study group on whether the 13 UW colleges should merge with the 16 tech colleges. And here's what we learned in the interview. Voss said the informal discussions being led by Representative Terry Katsma are not ready for public debate. It's just a group of people, kicking around ideas. But Voss, as a former chairman of Joint Finance, conceded, yes, there might be savings. He said that some of these UW colleges and tech colleges are within walking distance of each other. But really the bottom line here, he said, if anything comes forth, it will not be until part of the next budget debate in 2017. And finally, Speaker Voss said he didn't know if there's any GOP interest in state Senate on this issue. Is there any state Senate interest in talking about a potential merger?
They're always looking for savings, but this is still in the early stages, if you will. And again, I don't think they're going to open this up or really get into this publicly until they have everything lined up. If this is an idea that they have full buy-in from the caucus and the other House, then you get into it. Otherwise, why would you open that can of worms publicly and take the hits unless you know you're going to get something done?
Yeah, but they're still operating. Okay, it's just informal discussions, but it's a huge issue. It would be the biggest change to the UW system since UW-Madison and Milwaukee were aligned with the four-year state colleges.
Which, again, is why you don't want to open that. I mean, if you're Robin Voss, in your mind you're going, I'm not going to expose my vulnerable members who have campuses in their districts or anybody to having to answer questions about this and getting beat up over it until I know for sure there's something worth making a fight over.
But GOP Senator Sheila Harsdorf. There are two of these campuses. There are several campuses in her district, and the Democrats on her higher education committee asked her for her position, and crickets, nothing coming out.
Okay. Again, if you don't have to deal with it, you don't want to deal with it. That's kind of what it's about.
Right. Okay, third subject. This controversial bill, making it a felony to do research on fetal tissue obtained as a result of an induced abortion, That was really intriguing this week. I mean, you had Andre Jacques and Joel Clefish bill. Mm-hmm. They brought out their amendment. They said that research continued to be allowed on fetal tissue obtained before January 1 of this year, but then the Republican train got a little sidetracked there.
Well, John Spiros, for example, raised concerns about making a felony, for example.
He's from Marshfield. Do you think Marshfield Clinic said
There could be all kinds of reasons why. Kind of take a step back and look at it this way. We're, what, September, first week of September, full week of September. A lot of these guys have not met as a caucus in weeks.
That's true.
After the budget broke up in July, they all went their separate ways.
Right.
So there's been momentum behind these Planned Parenthood bills for the last few weeks because of these videos that have been going on, right? There have been public hearings about them. But as a caucus, neither House has sat down in a while to say, okay, where are we at? And Clayfish said, I believe this week, that he was caught off guard, kind of surprised the first time as chair at how this vote went. There was like nip and tuck at the end. There's the whole show with Kessler was out of the country to get him on the phone to vote and all this kind of stuff. But it's partly because some folks are pushing these bills without knowing for sure where are we as a caucus.
Right.
The question becomes, all right, it's clear the committee, what's the full caucus want to do? Spiro said maybe there'd be more changes. I think he said something like that. Clayfish talked about the possibility of going back and talking with others about this. What will the caucus say when it gets together sometime in the next week or two? Okay, where are we at? What do we want done? Now, the changes they made did not satisfy UW Madison.
Right.
Researchers, WMC this week says they're against the bill.
And that's very important. Hmm? That's very important.
Yeah, the
WMC just announced, if they go pedal to the metal on it.
But there are all these issues to work out. And you go back to the Senate, where Alberta Darling said weeks ago, I have concerns about the research aspect of it. How are we going to address that? So they have some stuff to work out, if you will, before they get a done bill. There's some momentum for it, the idea of banning some of the stuff. There's momentum there, but again, the details are going to be the thing they have to work out.
What about, where is Darling on the revised amendment, which allows research on fetal tissue obtained prior to this year?
Oh, that's a good question. I've drawn a blank about that right now.
Okay. So we don't know. The point is, the Assembly can make their members walk the gauntlet on this thing in the face of WMC opposition and the split, because Spiro said, I don't think it should be a felony.
Yeah.
You're talking about sending potential medical providers away for years.
Now, remember, too, there's much more of a ardent anti-abortion caucus in both houses, both Republican houses these days. So remember we thought the 20-week abortion ban with no exceptions for rape or incest? There was some talk of, years past, that had been an issue in the Senate because they would have been, it sailed through with no problem in the Senate. There was more talk about in the Assembly, really.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't know if that projects, if you will, forward in this bill, but that's something to watch. That maybe it's not as a squishy issue, if you will, for some senators that you might think it might be.
Do you think, is there any doubt in your mind that Speaker Voss and Jacques and Clayfish will bring this to a vote here in this fall session?
Oh, there's going to be definitely a pressure to do that. The question goes back to, though, what can they get through the whole House? And you have vulnerable members. What are they going to be satisfied with and all that kind of stuff.
And if the Senate's not going to take it, if there's problems there.
Yes. Tough vote to put your people through not to have anything happen in their house.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, let's talk presidential politics. Two developments. Let's talk first about the Hillary Clinton visit. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin loomed a little bit larger in presidential politics this week. Well, let's look at Hillary's polls. The Marquette poll in April, JR, as you remember. Who should be the Democratic presidential nominee? Clinton 58%, Biden 12%. Okay, both she and Scott Walker had, they didn't have the finest summer. So let's fast forward to August poll. Same question. Clinton 44%, Sanders, who wasn't even asked about in April, 32%, and Biden 12%. Do you think this poll played any role in the reason why Hillary came to Milwaukee, or am I overreading?
It reflects her national numbers. There's nothing really unique about that with Wisconsin. Now, what is interesting that those Marquette poll numbers, though, is that Sanders seems to be doing better in the Dane County area, which natural constituency, more progressive bent to Dane County politics. You have Madison here, all these other things going on. Milwaukee, large African-American population. Hillary Clinton's doing better there than Sanders is. There's a problem for Bernie Sanders going down the road. Take a step back. Wisconsin is not until April 5th.
I believe there's a primary somewhere there. Yep.
Big thing is this March 1st primaries. Now, Sanders is doing well in Iowa, New Hampshire. That's not good for Hillary Clinton, but she can survive in part because of her organization, her money, and March 1st, all these southern states with large black populations, the Democratic base, are going to turn out and vote. If he gets wiped out there, for example, that kind of cripples his campaign a little bit. How does he survive that? Because you can't just win on progressive college liberals. You know, that's just not going to carry through the nomination between now and next summer. So, Wisconsin might not be that player, that important come April, but, a good state for her to do well in. She also probably remembers 2008.
Yes.
She was the presumptive nominee in, October of 11, or 7, right?
Yes.
The momentum
Gentleman
got away from her.
Mr. Obama.
The train hit full speed in Wisconsin. He wiped her up by, a dozen points, 17? Huge win. This should be a state that she does well in. blue-collar Democratic base. That should be one of her strong points. She got wiped out here because of the progressive angle, the progressive caucus, if you will, within the base here. He did well with Barack Obama, both of those. Could Bernie Sanders tap into that? Yeah. But he's got to get to Wisconsin in good shape to be in position to take advantage of the opportunities he has here compared to Hillary Clinton.
Well, when you and I look at a speech like Hillary Clinton's, we look at what does she do to connect in Wisconsin? Mm-hmm. And I was struck in two ways. She talked about Black Lives Matter specifically. She mentioned the shooting of Dontre Hamilton. So point one, she capitalized on that. And then she was very critical of Governor Walker. And that tough guy in a motorcycle quote,
yeah.
Well, let's take a second and listen to two excerpts from what Hillary Clinton told the UW-Milwaukee audience yesterday.
Hey, I want to say something about another issue you will not hear about from the Republicans. You will not hear them say anything about ending the era of mass incarceration, and you will not hear them say Black Lives Matter. Being here in Milwaukee, I just want to say, as a mother and as a grandmother, my heart breaks for the family of Dontre Hamilton. We need to end the violence that has cast a shadow over Milwaukee and too many of our communities around our country. We need to recognize that the ability of Black mothers to raise their children in safety is a woman's issue. It's an American issue. Let's talk about your governor. You know, Governor Walker has made it his personal mission to roll back women's health and rights. He did defund Planned Parenthood, making it harder for some Wisconsin women to get those cancer screenings, those breast exams, that birth control, that life-saving preventive care. It seems to me, just observing him, that Governor Walker thinks because he busts unions, starves universities, guts public education, demeans women, scapegoats teachers, nurses, and firefighters, he's some kind of tough guy on his motorcycle. A real leader. Well, that is not leadership, folks. Leadership means fighting for the people you represent and putting their interests first. It looks like he just gets his marching orders from the Koch brothers and just goes down the list, whatever they tell him to do.
JR, the question is, has Hillary Clinton lined up the Democratic Party in Wisconsin's heavy hitters? Or are some of them still on the fence because their allegiances go back to maybe as far as Biden?
Well, so much early. The people who have endorsed so far largely are seeing him gravitate toward Clinton. Now, one thing that's interesting is the state party of Wisconsin, like other state parties, has signed a joint fundraising agreement with Hillary Clinton. Now, the party says we would do this with anybody who wants to do it. What it allows you to do, if you're a donor, if you're backing Hillary Clinton, you can give to her state campaign. You can also give to this new fundraising operation, which gives you another vehicle or to go around. You know, you hit $2,700 per primary and general election, mm-hmm. right? A new opening to add more money in the pot for Hillary
yep.
Clinton. So
yep.
there's that. That's raised some suspicions among Democrats of all the parties in the tank for Hillary Clinton. Just kind of an interesting thing. She is the establishment. She knows these parties inside and out, or at least her team does, from years and years and years. So it gives her a leg up, if you will, in some ways, over the Sanders of the world. Now, Biden, he's an interesting case. What if he gets in? You know, he's in the same.
Because he goes to a Labor Day event and he works it like he's a candidate,
oh, yeah.
and then he goes on Colbert and he kind of, presents this, oh, poor me, I really don't have the energy. But
yeah.
go ahead.
They always want to be wanted, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Nobody ever says, I decided to run on my own. They always say, I was approached about running for, you know, X, Y, and Z.
But good point.
You know, I don't get the feeling yet that the establishment has really settled in. There's still that air, though, of presumption that she's going to be the nominee eventually. Now, her numbers aren't that great, so maybe it won't play out, but there's definitely that presumption of, well, she's going to be it.
And new party chair Lanning and new vice chair David Representative Bowen, they have to be neutral in all these things, don't they?
You know, that's always been the rub with any party, right? They say they're neutral, but are they really neutral? Are they kind of favoring one side or the other? So that's going back. I mean, look at the 2010 Republican race for primary, or primary for governor, right?
Yes.
Scott Walker was the establishment favorite, you know, from day one.
Yeah.
And Newman complained about that, right? There's always that, right? It crosses party lines in election cycles.
So. I understand. Okay, now let's swing to the Republican candidate, specifically Governor Scott Walker. Well, I want to start out. First of all, he was asked, what should the role of the United States be with the Syrian migrants? and he said hypotheticals, I don't deal in it. There was a lot of criticism for that, whereupon then 2 days later, or a few hours later, he says the U.S. shouldn't be taking on any more Syrian refugees right now, excuse me. In the last year, America has received almost 70,000 refugees, of which nearly 2,000 are from Syria. We've spent something like $4 billion in humanitarian relief in terms of helping the situation in Syria. Before we go on to his speech yesterday, why did he do the hypothetical, I'm not going to talk about it, oh, I do have a position, let's not take any more?
Good question. I mean, in an odd way, we're only talking about one flub for Scott Walker in a week, a verbal flub. That's almost a good thing for him. He's getting his feet back under him. That second answer on the question is what Scott Walker should be doing. When you talk to operatives about this stuff, he's been making these mistakes where he kind of brainstorms out loud or like shifts position. He needs to do is say, ask him that question about Syria, and his pivot was great. It said, look, you know, we shouldn't take refugees. They're a symptom of the problem. The problem is ISIS. We need to focus on ISIS. The pivot is to a strong point. He has a very clear message on ISIS. We should eradicate ISIS. Right?
Crush them.
He needs to figure out how to pivot quicker and more on his toes from, you're asking me about the Canadian border. I'm going to pivot back to my point about legal immigration. Okay. I'm not going to get into these hypotheticals and get dragged into like possible flubs. Focus on your key message, which for him is, I'm a fighter. I've got results. I've taken on the unions. He needs to pivot better. And that was, it took him 2 days, but at least showed a sign of, okay, now I know how to pivot to this, what I want to talk about, not what you want to ask me about.
Okay, and then second point in his week, he went to Eureka College, mm-hmm. where Ronald Reagan graduated, and in his speech he said it's where Ronald Reagan found
his voice,
and we have a new theme. He's going to wreak havoc in Washington. That's a new one. So is he dumping unintimidated, JR?
Oh, no, he's still bringing that up all the time, but what Walker's trying to do is, I think as people realize, okay, we're in a period of where the outsider is captured the base's attention, right? We can't really authentically say we're an outsider. I mean, Walker's going to try. He did say last week, I'm not a career politician.
He's a public servant.
20-plus years in public office. What they're trying to do is say, okay, these other folks are capturing the attention of the electorate right now, but they don't have a record. Carla Fiorina, Ben Carson, they've never led anything in terms of government. What Walker can do is express, I feel your pain. I feel your frustration. I'm frustrated too, which he said several times. Then pivot to, by the way, I have a record that shows I've done stuff.
Okay.
And that's what he's trying to do is say, I'm not just someone who's taking on the establishment. I can get things done, and you can trust me, if you will.
He's unintimidated. He's going to wreak havoc. And then he gave his day one outline, what I do on the first day in January of 2017 if elected president. And we have known that he is going to tear up, he says, the treaty with Iran over nukes. And we have known that he's going to do all he can to abolish the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. But he added a new target, well, it's an old target to those of us in Wisconsin, the union bosses. So let's take a minute and how Walker focused again on union bosses and the changes that he would implement on day one if elected president. Yeah, let's listen to that.
Going forward, I'm here to announce today that we've got a plan to wreak havoc on Washington, and our plan starts on day one. Next week, we're going to be on Monday in Las Vegas, and we're going to tell the American people what we're going to do when it comes to taking on the big government union bosses. Simple things like on day one, I'm going to stop the government from taking money out of the paychecks of federal employees for political union dues, because I don't think any worker in this country should be required to put money into a political fund that doesn't support candidates that they don't support. Why should you have to have money from your paycheck go to support somebody that you fundamentally oppose out there? That's wrong. We're going to start with that on day one, and we're going to lay out more when it comes to shifting the power from the big government union bosses to the hardworking people of this country.
And trotting out union bosses. Now, that's something that played well in Wisconsin, and he had a lot of major victories. Is that a effective national presidential campaign theme?
Well, it's the one thing people know about him in the base, the Republican base, is that he took on the unions and won, right? That's one of his main arguments for being president. What they're trying to do is remind people of the other things he's done, you know, that are conservative causes, if you will. You know, the $3.6 billion deficit he took on, cutting taxes $2+ billion.
Right to work.
Cutting state money, even though he wasn't really in favor of right to work, he was not really enthusiastic about it before, he now brags about it. Cutting state money for Planned Parenthood. And this, the super PAC, Unintimidated, that's backing him, began its ad buy in Iowa this week with a TV ad basically trying to begin the argument of, it's not just this guy that, you know, fought the unions, he also did A, B, and C. Their idea is, We're going to remind them of the successes in Wisconsin and the record that they don't know about. They'll tell you that even though Scott Walker is known to us as somebody who's fought the unions and all these things, people, the general Republican voter, doesn't quite know yet beyond this guy who fought collective bargaining.
Go back to that poll by our friend Charles Franklin. Mm-hmm. Do you perceive Governor Walker as somebody who gets things done, 60%?
Yeah. And that's what he keeps saying, too. I'm a fighter and I've won. I fought and I won. He keeps saying it over and over again.
Well, JR, his poll numbers continue to not be good. I mean, do I have this right? CNN, Trump 32, Carson 19, Bush 9, former Governor Huckabee and Governor Walker 5%?
Even more damaging than that one, Quinnipiac is out this morning, had Walker at 3%.
3%.
In 10th place in Iowa after he led the poll in July at 18%. Now, 3%, by the way, is the margin of error in the poll, plus or minus 3 points. This is not good for Governor Walker. Even though he's trying to get his legs back under him, he's suffering kind of the lag. These polls are all a couple weeks old, right, or a week or two old. They're still coming in. If he gets any momentum out of this plus the debate on next week,
right,
it's going to take a while to show up in these polls. He's facing this stream of stories about how he's floundering, how he's dropping in the polls, how things aren't going well, and it just kind of reinforces the image of this guy flubs lines, he's in trouble, he's fading, you know, this guy is not doing well. So it's a vicious cycle for him right now.
And he set up the difference between he, and now, by the way, Carly Fiorina is going to be added to that. Mm-hmm. So at Wednesday's poll at the Reagan Library, Wednesday's debate at the Reagan Library is going to be 11 candidates, not 10. But the Governor Walker's line, what's the difference between he and the other 10? I'm the only one of the major ones who literally laid out a plan, and mine starts on day one.
And what he's saying now is, where's your plan? If you want to repeal Obamacare, where's your plan?
Right.
Put it up. His actions are not enough. I do expect from talking to folks that Walker will be more aggressive in the debate next week and kind of mix it up some more. That's part of it. But he needs to have a better showing than he did the first time, which it was largely mistake-free in August, the debate. But he didn't really mix it up with anybody. He didn't really stand out from the crowd and show, you know, I'm the same gravitas. He tried to go like a do-no-harm approach, if you will.
But he's got the money because of his backing. He can stay through Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, can he?
Easy. Now, here's the other thing. All these poll numbers that are bad for him, all these issues, if Walker, and this is an if he can kind of right the ship and begin this substantive policy rollout, if you will, remind people of what he's done besides take on the unions, and then come November, December, make the closing argument. You know, have his, like, honed argument for Iowa voters of,
yep,
I've done this, this, and this. This is why you should elect me. If he catches fire, and again, we talked about Iowa, it's all about expectations.
Yep.
If he meets or exceeds expectations in Iowa in February 1 or whatever it is, that could help propel him forward. So he's got some time. It's not like he's done right now. Although there are people who tell you they think the window's closed because once you lose Iowa voters, it's hard to get them back. But they have a plan in front of them how we get back on top.
Quinnipiac said he was in 3% in Iowa. Okay, time for...
place.
I'm sorry?
10th place.
10th place, three with 3% as the margin of error?
Yeah.
Okay, time to move on. Wiz Politics stock report rising. Supreme Court candidates?
So here's, it's interesting, right? There are two we know of so far, Joanne Kloppenburg.
And Mr. Judge Donald.
Yep, out of Milwaukee. Rebecca Braley, appeals court judge, we expect her to announce any day now, any week. She's a conservative favorite. The perception is, while she hasn't said I'm running, exception is she's going to get in. I mean, that's pretty much a done deal in most people's minds I talk to. Claude Cavelli, longtime Madison attorney, talked to him this week, said, I am thinking about running.
Right.
Called himself apolitical. He's going to gauge if he can raise the money and support to run. But what it all suggests to you is, okay, Justice Crooks has not said he's going to run again, right?
He's but 77.
The four people who are talking about it, that suggests to you they expect him not to.
Okay.
Talking an open seat, all kinds of dynamics to that race. One, conservatives has a majority in the court for sure. Crooks kind of swings back and forth. They pick up that seat, gives them five solid ones in the court. Liberals need that seat to have a pathway back because Ziegler and Gailman are up in 7 and 8. They both have ethics problems that you could use against them. Now, I think it's easier with Gailman than maybe Ziegler, but they have some baggage, if you will. They could beat up on them. So they're a really important seat for the court.
Yep.
Now, beyond that, here's this other thing you have to think about. Presidential primary in Wisconsin is April 5th. If either party's primary is still alive come April, it could really skew the turnout one way or another in this race. Go back to 2008. 1.5 million people voted in the presidential primary that year in February, when we were in February. 830,000 voted in the Supreme Court race in April.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd had that turnout in February and April, maybe you still have Justice Louis Butler and not Justice Michael Gailman. I mean, maybe. It's a whole hypothetical. But will that change the turnout? What if the Republican primary is still going on, the Democratic one isn't? vice versa, if they're both going on, will the race become more partisan because you have like these really partisan voters turning out? All kinds of dynamics in that race, but that field is shaping up, and it could be a fascinating race we haven't seen before in Wisconsin come spring.
I think rising is a good call. Okay, mixed, the minimum markup law?
So this has kind of become the new shiny object for conservatives, if you will. They've got this big victory in right to work, prevailing wage. You can kind of sense already in the Capitol that there's a group of people trying to focus on minimum markup. Now, this requires you, if you're a retailer, to add a certain amount of cost to the price of a product, right? We've talked about this for years about trying to get rid of it. But what always happens between a big business versus small business, your mom and pop shop argument, right? It cuts across party lines, yes. Not a pure Dem versus Republican issue.
Right.
So can they get this one? Now, what I've talked to people about this week is the echo chamber, like talk radio, the conservative blogs. Can they kind of build the case, if you will, much like with the right to work, prevailing wage, of pushing momentum and then getting this rolling? That'll be interesting to watch this session. He goes, I don't know yet they can pull it off, but they are feeling the urgency of, okay, let's try and get this done, see what happens.
Somebody in the press courts, in the press room yesterday, said that Speaker Voss may have to allow a vote on this during the fall session, minimum markup.
Entirely possible. Now, Leah Vukmir is really pushing this bill in the Senate right now. From talking to her office, she's worked with Jim Ott about it a little bit, but
yep.
I would expect Lee to be a big advocate of this going forward.
And falling, why are Secretary of State, Mr. La Follette?
Let's face it, his lawsuit over the cuts in the budget to his office is a long shot at best. His best hope going into this whole case was, okay, get a liberal Dane County judge who says, okay, I'm going to give you a temporary injunction. He lost the first round with Judge Lanford, who basically said, you haven't proven yet, you've got a good chance of succeeding. Now, she also said, you may have not a done deal yet. You may be able to prove some other things later on, but if you lose that round, it's not a good sign for your lawsuit going forward. And, you know, let's face it, he's gone from having an office across the street.
Yep.
He's been in office now for on and off for almost 40 years. He has slowly watched his powers erode. Now he's in the Capitol basement.
He's in the Capitol basement, and there's this sign. Use this to go to the basement for the Secretary of State and State Treasurer.
It's a death by a thousand cuts, and this is one more cut for Doug La Follette. And barring some reversal in the courts, he's not going to have much going forward to do. And oh, by the way, the legal theory is, even if he wins in Dane County, go to appeal in Supreme Court, he's not going to win there.
Okay. Listen, I think the presidential debate, the Republicans, is next Wednesday. Let's shoot rewind on next Thursday, and let's bring back our pal, Brandon Schultz.
Sounds lovely.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 11.